Oh, Srimad Bhaicharana Vinabhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Kodi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Sika Host Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopika Bhakti Vrinda Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki, Mayapur Navarin Dham Ki, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki, Ganga Mai Ki, Jamuna Mai Ki, Bhakti Devi Ki, Tulsi Maharani Ki, Shishi Radhagiri Hari Ki, Jagannath Subhadra Baladev Ki, Shishi Gornitai Ki, Gopura Premanandi, all glorious disembodied devotees, all glorious disembodied devotees, all glorious disembodied devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Sharmishtana Makanyaka.
Sharmishtana Makanyaka.
Shaki Sahasra Samyukta.
Shaki Sahasra Samyukta.
Guru Putra Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
There's two verses here, there's only one on the board. Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Shakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Shakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Sakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Sakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Sakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Sakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Ekada Danavendrasya.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Sharmishthana Makanyaka.
Sakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Sakhi Sahasra Sanyukta.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Guru Putriya Chaphamini.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Ekada
Devayanya purochane pushpita trum sankule vyacharatka gitali yanalini puline bala. I'll just read the translations. This verse is pretty good. A lot of verses. Sukadeva Goswami said, one day Vrishaparva's daughter Sharmishta, who was innocent but angry by nature, was walking with Devayani, the daughter of Shukracharya, and with thousands of friends in the palace garden. The garden was full of lotuses and trees, of flowers and fruits, and was inhabited by sweetly singing birds and bumblebees. Tajalashaya masadya kanya kamala lochanaha tirenyasya dukulani vijaru singchatir mita. When the young lotus-eyed girls came to the bank of a reservoir of water they wanted to enjoy by bathing, thus they left their clothing on the bank and began sporting, throwing water on one another. Viksha vrajantam girisham sahadevya vrishasthitam sahashotirya vasansi payadhur vridhitastriyaha. While sporting in the water, the girls suddenly saw Lord Shiva passing by, seated on the back of his bull with his wife, Parvati. Ashamed because they were naked, the girls quickly got out of the water and covered themselves with their garments. Sarmishta janati vaso guru putya samavyayat sviyam matva prakupita devayani damabravit. Sharmishta unknowingly put Devayani's dress on her own body, thus angering Devayani, who then spoke as follows. Aho niriksya tamasya dasya karma yasampratam asmatthayam dhritavati shuniva havir adhvare. Oh, just see the activities of this servant maid Sharmishta. Disregarding all etiquette, she has put on my dress just like a dog snatching clarified butter meant for use in a sacrifice. Yar idam tapasa shrishtang mukhang pungsha parasyaye dhayate yar iha jyoti shiva panta padarshitaha yanvandant yupatishtante Lokanatha Sureshaha Bhagavana Bibishvatma Pavanashri Niketanaha Vayam Tatra Bibrigava Shishyoshana Pitasuraha Asmadhayam Dritavati Shudro Vedam Ivashati. We are among the qualified Brahmanas who are accepted as the face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Brahmanas have created the entire universe by their austerity, and they always keep the absolute truth within the core of their hearts. They have directed the path of good fortune, the path of Vedic civilization, and because they are the only worshipable objects within this world, they are offered prayers and worship even by the great demigods, the directors of the various planets, and even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul, the Supreme Purifier, the husband of the goddess of fortune. And we are even more respectable because we are in the dynasty of Bhrigu. Yet although this woman's father, being among the demons, is our disciple, she has put on my dress exactly like a sudra, taking charge of Vedic knowledge. Evam shipanting sarmishta guru putrim habashata rushas vasantyurangiva Tarshitatasta Dachata. Sukadeva Goswami said, when thus rebuked in cruel words, Sarmishtha was very angry, breathing heavily like a serpent and biting her lower lip with her teeth. She spoke to the daughter of Sukracharya as follows. Atma vritam avijnaya katha se bahu bhikshuki king na pratikshase kaseshmakam greenan bali pujo yatha. You beggar, since you don't understand your position, why should you unnecessarily talk so much? Don't all of you wait at our house, depending on us for your livelihood like crows? Purport, crows have no independent life. They fully depend on the remnants of foodstuffs thrown by householders into the garbage tank. Therefore, because a Brahmana depends on his disciples, when Sarmishtha was heavily rebuked by Devayani, she charged Devayani with belonging to a family of crow-like beggars. It is the nature of women to fight verbally at even a slight provocation. As we have seen from this incident, this has been their nature for a long, long time. So, very harsh words they're using. The best of friends, and suddenly they, you know, abusing each other with very strong words. We can see they're puffed up because of family positions. Vrishaparva, he was some kind of king, wasn't he? Vrishaparva. He was one of the demons. And, of course, Sukracharya was the guru of the demons. So, you know, both girls, they were misidentifying. Bodily identification. My father is very great. My family is great. My lineage is great. I'm great. This childish mentality, but we see children like that, isn't it? Of course, they were little. But just children, they were little grown up. I suppose teenage girls. But, we see children at school. I remember at school, you know, children fighting. My father's better than your father. You know, my father's a such and such. Your father's only such and such. This kind of mentality. So they're also affected by that. But they were quite eloquent. Devayani, you know, speaking some, you know, words of truth in a sense. She's saying, we're among qualified Brahmins. The Brahmins, she said, who are accepted as the face of the personality of God. This is a fact. It's in the Shastra. The Brahmanas have created the entire universe by their austerity, and they always keep the absolute truth within the core of their hearts. Might be going a bit far. They've created the entire universe, but certainly the power of penance is very great, and that's explained in the second canto by the Lord. But the Brahmins do keep the absolute truth within their hearts. I mean, that's what they're supposed to do, being situated in Brahman or in the on the spiritual platform. They have directed the path of good fortune, the path of Vedic civilization. That's a fact. That's what they should do. And because they are the only worshipful objects within this world, they are offered prayers and worship even by the great demigods, the directors of the various planets, even by the Supreme Personality of God, the Super Soul, the Supreme Purifier, the Husband of Goddess of Fortune. Well, we can't say that they're the only worshipable objects, although they're very worshipable, the Brahmanas, and it's true that the Supreme Personality of Godhead worships the Brahmanas. She also alludes here, she says, we are even more respected because we're in the dynasty of Bhrigu. So Bhrigu Muni was one of the great Brahmanas. I think he was a son of Brahma, wasn't he? Bhrigu? He was one of the sons of Brahma. He's the one that was the person that was deputed by the sages to go and ascertain who was the Supreme Personality of God. Was it Brahma, Vishnu, or Shiva? And, yeah, that's right, he was the son of Brahma. So he first went to Brahma, and he didn't show him any respect. He just sort of sauntered up, you know, how you doing? How's it going? So Lord Brahma, he got you know, he wasn't very happy with that. He was very angry. And then he went to Lord Shiva, who was his brother. And Lord Shiva came forward, you know, to embrace my dear brother like that. And he said, he backed up. He said, get away from me. You're filthy, dirty, you're covered in ashes. You're always surrounded by low-class people, ghosts. He said, don't touch me. So Lord Shiva became furious and he was ready to kill Bhrigu. But Parvati stopped him. She said, he's a Brahmana. You shouldn't kill Brahmanas. So then he went to see Lord Vishnu. So actually there are different kinds of offenses. Offense of the mind, offense of the words, offense of the body, physical offense. So mental offenses, at least that was the offense to Brahma. Then verbal was to Shiva. But the worst offense he committed to Lord Vishnu, physical offense. Because as soon as he went in his presence, then he just kicked him in the chest, stepped on his chest like that. Lord Vishnu was lying down. Goddess of Fortune was massaging his lotus feet. But Lord Vishnu didn't become angry. Rather, he took the humble position and he said, oh, my dear Bhrigu Muni, I hope my hard chest hasn't hurt your soft lotus foot. And then he actually seated Bhrigu nicely and he began to worship Bhrigu with suitable paraphernalia. So it said the Goddess of Fortune wasn't too pleased with that. And therefore she doesn't generally favor the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas generally not wealthy because of that. But anyhow, this illustrates how the Supreme Personality of Godhead respects the Brahmanas. When the Kumaras came to Vaikuntha, well, they were stopped at the gates by the gatekeepers, Jayan Vijay, and they, you know, became upset by the mentality of Jayan Vijay. These people are not on the proper level of consciousness to be in Vaikuntha, because they're looking at us on an external bodily platform only, thinking we're just little children. So they're not qualified to be here. They should go to the material world. They cursed them. So Lord Vishnu understood something going on, Lord Narayan. He came to the gates of Vaikuntha and he saw that what had happened. And immediately he apologized to the Kumaras that these gatekeepers are my representatives. And, you know, you are pure Brahmanas and they've mistreated you in this way. You know, please accept my apologies and please come inside the Vaikuntha. And these gatekeepers, they'll have to, you know, go to the material world. Because even though I might be able to counteract that, still, you know, because they have mistreated Brahmanas who are very dear to me, they should go. So, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahman Hitaya Chajagat Hitaya Krishna Govindaya Namo Namo Maha. The Lord is very affectionate towards the Brahmanas and cows also. When Sudama Brahmana came to see him, Sudama was an old friend from Gurukul days, so he was very poor, very poor. And when he came in, Lord Krishna was very living in great opulence at that time as a king in Dwarka. But nevertheless, he didn't, you know, disregard Sudama or ignore him. Not like the other case in the Mahabharata, isn't it? When Dronacharya came to see Draupada because they were school friends. And Dronacharya was from a Brahmin family, and Draupada, you know, he was from a Kshatriya family. And Draupada had promised to share anything he got, you know, with his. They promised each other whatever they got, they would share like that. But when later Dronacharya came to see Draupada and asked him, you know, to give him some land or something. In fact, he would do half the kingdom, actually. Draupada, you know, he abused him. He said, you know, you're just a, you know, beggar. And, you know, why should we have to give half our kingdom to you? You're not qualified like that. So he misbehaved and he suffered for it in the long run, because Dronacharya, he became determined to to defeat Draupada, take everything away from him. And in fact, he did defeat him. And because he was much superior with the military art. And of course, Draupada, he prayed to have a son who would kill Dronacharya. And he performed a special sacrifice. And a male child and female child came out from that sacrifice. So the male child was Drishtadyumna, who later killed Drona in the battle of Kurukshetra. And the female child was Draupadi, who became the wife of the Pandavas. Anyhow, that's an example of mistreating a Brahmana. The serious consequences. And the gatekeepers also mistreated the Brahmana. But the Lord, he always treats the Brahmana as well. So Sudama, when he came, the Lord immediately got down from his exalted throne and he seated Sudama in that exalted position and he washed his feet, sprinkled the water on his family members, worshipped him with different paraphernalia. So in this way it's a fact that the Brahmanas are in a very special position. Not just Brahmanas, but Vaishnava Brahmanas are in the most exalted position. Because some Brahmanas, they may be impersonalists, but still they have to be respected. But the Vaishnava Brahmanas are the topmost of all the Brahmanas. So she was right in that sense, that the Brahmanas are to be respected. But you know, taking it down to that kind of level, she should also have been humble. A Brahmana should be humble, not proud of his position. So just because the other young girl, you know, took her clothes by mistake, you know, she shouldn't have gotten carried away to the extent of, you know, calling her a dog snatching clarified butter, like a dog snatching clarified butter meant for use in a sacrifice. So she had, you know, the false impression that, you know, she was very pure, everything connected with her was pure, like her dress, you know, she's saying her dress is like clarified butter being, which is meant for use in sex. Her dress is completely pure, and you know that this other girl is just like a dog. So that we see the same kind of mentality actually in Sringi, the Brahmin son of a Samik Rishi. He was angered when he found that Prikkad Maharaj had put a garland of a dead snake around his father's neck. Of course, that was not a good thing to do. Prikkad Maharaj, definitely, you know, he got, you know, he was got a bit carried away. He was, you know, fatigued and maybe a bit agitated and by hunger and thirst. He was in the forest, he'd been hunting, and he wasn't received by the sage. So he became, you know, upset by that, and he just tossed a dead snake around his neck. But it wasn't necessary to do like that. And when he was going back to his city, he was also feeling bad. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. That wasn't the right thing to do. But ultimately, we take it that it's the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, because that's how the Bhagavatam came to be spoken. There was also that. There's a similar. Anyway, I'll relate it after. But when the sage awoke from his. Meditation. The boy came, and then he started, you know, abusing Prikkad Maharaj, in saying that these Kshatriyas are just like dogs. They should stay outside the door of the master. And we Brahmins are the real masters, and they should respect us. And then he just cursed him to die within 7 days. So this is not really Brahminical consciousness. But the father woke up. And he realized what the boy had done. And, you know, then he was a real Brahmana. He was a real sadhu. Because he didn't get upset. He said, oh, he said, what are you doing? He said, this is an insignificant offense and you've given a huge punishment for it. And furthermore, he said, don't you understand that the king is the representative of the Lord? So, you know, he wasn't taking the view that only the Brahmins are worshipful, only we are worshipful. But he saw the king is also the representative of the Lord. The king has to be respected. So, you know, you shouldn't have done like that. Because if you get rid of the king, then who's going to protect the citizens? There'll be thieves and rogues flourishing. And who will protect the Brahmanas? So different kinds of personalities are representing the Supreme Lord, and there has to be some mutual respect between them. You know, so that was example of the Brahmanas abusing the Kshatriyas. In fact, it said that Kali Yuga entered just through Sringi. That's how Kali Yuga started. And there are other examples of this kind of abuse of Brahmanas or abuse of Kshatriyas, you know, by one by the other. For example, Vena, King Vena, he took the other extreme, that he stopped all the Brahminical sacrifices and all religious rituals, and he said that all the demigods, you know, all the demigods reside in the body of the king with all their powers. They're all residing in the body of the king, and the king is the representative of the Supreme Personality of God. Therefore, just worship the king. There's no need for any other activities, any Brahminical sacrifices, any worship of the Brahmins can stop it. But of course, this created an intolerable situation within these kingdoms, and also rogues and thieves flourished. Example is given like ants on a log, and if it's burning on both ends, then you know, ants are in a very precarious position. So the sages, they said that, you know, the people are like that during the reign of King Vena. They're like ants on a log, and on one end is the rogues and thieves, and the other end is this, you know, cruel King Vena. So in that way, the citizens are being harassed. They're in a very unfortunate position. So the sadhus were very concerned. We installed this person on the king, on the throne, as a king, and he's doing so much abominable activity. Something will have to happen. So they gave him strong warning, and then when he didn't rectify himself, then they cursed him. But after cursing him, there was no king. So then thieves and rogues flourished even more. So then they appealed to the Lord, and that's how Lord appeared as Prithu Maharaj and rectified the situation. And he was a great respecter of Brahmanas. There's a nice portion of the Bhagavatam where the Kumaras come to see Prithu Maharaj. So it's very nice, the description, how he welcomed them, bathed their feet, and you know, he said, "My kingdom belongs to you. You do whatever you like with it." You know, he's completely sort of surrendered in his behavior and his attitude. So this is the proper mentality to have toward the Brahmin. So Prikit Maharaj is actually, his mentality at that point was not right. Especially, he should have understood that sage is in deep meditation. You know, he's a real sadhu, rather than, you know, treating like that. But anyhow, as we mentioned, it's arrangement of the Lord. There was also another case, but this is a little bit different case, that concerns King Indrajumna. He was a king in the south of India, and he retired to the Malaya Hills, where he had a cottage. He had his retreat there, and he was deep in meditation, and Agastya Rishi came past with his, you know, many hundreds of followers, and they expected some reception, but the king was so deep in meditation that he didn't notice him. So Agastya actually cursed him to become an elephant, and that's how he appeared as Gajendra. Gajendra the elephant, who you know, who was caught in the water, bitten by a crocodile, and there was a big fight. And because it was in the water, which is the natural habitat of the crocodile, and Gajendra grew weak, but then he prayed to the Lord for protection, beautiful prayers, and the Lord responded and killed the crocodile. It's an example of someone who's praying to the Lord while in distress. and became purified because of him. So just like Bharat Maharaj remembered his previous birth, when he was in a deer's body, he remembered his previous birth as Bharat Maharaj. So the Gajendra was actually able to remember his previous birth as Indradumna. So they're examples of persons who were very highly elevated devotees, even though they, you know, somehow got into some animal body, they remained on a very high devotional level, devotional platform. Anyway, so like that, there are many examples of, you know, cursing or conflict between Brahmins and Kshatriyas, and especially when it gets down to this kind of a level, young girls, and the Prabhupada's made the point that women have a tendency to argue anyway. That's why generally, you know, a lot of women living in one place, it doesn't seem to work out often. It's usually better than living in a little bit of space there, rather than not like the Brahmachari ashram, you know, maybe packed up with many, many persons. They can tolerate a bit better. Usually ladies need a bit of space, otherwise it sometimes may degenerate into that. But of course, it depends on level of spiritual advancement. After all, we're not these bodies. If someone is advanced in spiritual life, they can transcend the bodily nature. Everyone in the material world has faults. Men have faults. Women have faults. And we have to not be dragged down onto that, you know, low level of identification with the body and fighting with one another on the basis of the body. But this is an example of what not to do. You know, get into some foolish argument over some insignificant thing, abuse each other to the point, you know, where it's, you know, it's kind of beyond beyond settlement, beyond turn, and then, you know, what happened? That Sharmishta threw Devayani into the well, wasn't it? Anyhow, that was all the arrangement of providence, I guess we could say. King Yayati rescued her, and then she married Yayati, and Sharmishta was a maidservant. But then later on, isn't it, that there was one condition that Yayati would never accept Sharmishta in his bed, but later on somehow they took place. She had children by him as well. So again, a big argument. So we have to not degenerate into this kind of enviousness of one another, petty quarreling over insignificant matters. We should realize we have a higher responsibility and duty to cooperate together in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if there are sometimes some quarrels or disagreements. We should have to put them aside, forgive and forget, give them up. Because, you know, a devotee can't be peaceful if he's at some kind of loggerheads with another devotee and has some ill feeling towards another devotee or some grudge or some... It just disturbs the mind. It's not worth maintaining that kind of attitude, because who's the real sufferer? We ourselves will be the real sufferer. We just be torturing ourselves if we maintain some enmity to other devotees. So we should actually want to get rid of that kind of burden from our heart and our consciousness. So that's why I recommend to, you know, ask for forgiveness. I mean, take the humble position, not take the, you know, puffed up position, like snake raising its hood, you know. Who do you think you are? I'm going to bite you. No, we should take a humble position like that. I'm Das and Das. Finally, forgive my, you know, foolish activities. Bless me. Put your foot on my head so that I may be purified by the dust. This is the proper way to overcome these kind of differences which are arising in the material, it's the nature of the material world, isn't it? That, so many bad qualities are tending to come out. One is wrongly situated in relationship to the material energy. Material energy, one of Krishna's energy. One is trying to exploit it for his own sense gratification, then, you know, that's very contaminating and so many bad kind of qualities come out. But we need to be purified from these bad qualities. So what's the purificatory process? It's hearing the Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name, engaging in devotional service. So there's a nice verse that second canto, Pravista Karna Randrena, Svanam Bhava Sururuham, Dunuti Samalam Krishna, Salilasya Yatasharat, that the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam, enters the heart of the devotee through the ear, enters the heart, and it sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus it cleanses the dust of material consciousness, such as lust and anger and hankerings. So thus it acts like autumnal rains upon the pools of muddy water. So I know in India in the rainy season there's such a lot of rain that a lot of water coming from the rivers, even to come from the mountains, and it washes a lot of mud into the rivers and ponds, so everything becomes muddy. But afterwards, in autumn, they're different. The rains have a different effect. They're, not so often the rain, and that rain it cleans the ponds and the rivers again. So that's a nice example of how the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam it cleanses the heart of the devotee. So this only way to overcome this kind of enviousness in material life. We all tend to be subjected to this same kind of thing as these girls, to quarrel on the slightest, for the slightest reason. And you can see it going on all over the world. It even reaches, gigantic levels where there are, huge wars going on between. Religious groups there, Protestant and Catholic, and they just like, it's actually like generations and generations of just Protestants hate Catholics, Catholics hate Protestants, and they write slogans, on the walls, no Pope here, things like that. And remember 1690, which is. Does anybody know what that means? Remember 1690? Does anybody know what it means? I doubt it, but anyway, it has great significance in Northern Ireland. Because that's when King William of Orange defeated King James of England in the battle. So King James was a Catholic king, and William of Orange was a Protestant. So I think that battle was in Ireland, Battle of the Boyne. So this is a very significant event in the history of Northern Ireland, but of course it's just an insignificant event in eternal time. But still their lives are very much shaped around that, molded around that kind of consciousness. And they can't tolerate, the communities can't tolerate each other, always fighting with each other, blowing each other up. You've probably heard on the news or read the newspaper. So this is the nature of material consciousness. This is a very low grade of consciousness. It's like animals. It's like sometimes you see dogs in the street. I mean, sometimes in India you'll see like that, isn't it? Dogs, suddenly they just all, big snarling brawl. So, Krishna conscious life means to rise above that dog and cat platform. Civilized life. So, being able to realize that there's enough for everybody. We don't have to you know, we don't have to get down to the level of animals fighting over a few scraps. Krishna is the provider, and the real reward anyway is not material, to accumulate material wealth. The real reward is to advance in spiritual life and to become Krishna conscious. If someone becomes Krishna conscious, they become satisfied and they can live even very simply. They can be satisfied because they have Krishna. So actually that's the principle of brahminical life. A Brahmin is supposed to be spiritually advanced, and because he's spiritually advanced, he's satisfied. Therefore he can live very simply. He doesn't, you know, want to get into, you know, all kinds of complicated material arrangements, because he knows that becoming Krishna conscious is more important. So this is the way then to overcome all difficulties of material existence and to become satisfied at heart, to cultivate Krishna consciousness and to appreciate the good qualities in others, in devotees, and to encourage them also in Krishna consciousness. That way one can become, actually he can become loved by others, and can become appreciated by others. Like the six Goswamis, it's said that they were popular both with the gentle and the ruffians. Everybody liked them because they were such saintly personalities. And they, you know, they were not full of material desires, trying to fight over material possessions, but rather they were absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord, used everything in devotional service of the Lord. They themselves lived austerely, but you know, if someone came with money, they would use it. They built beautiful temples in Vrindavan. So we should follow in the footsteps of such saintly personalities and try to rise above all kinds of petty quarrels and petty enviousness, become satisfied at heart through devotional service, and this way be a true credit to Srila Prabhupada and to Krishna. Set example. Devotees should be seen in the society as saintly persons, because if people respect the devotees and listen to the devotees, then this will be to their eternal benefit. They'll also become uplifted. But if devotees exhibit some kind of low-class behavior or materialistic behavior, then people won't respect. They'll think they're just like us. Maybe they'll even think they're worse than us. So this is not good. Devotee has to act so that Krishna's prestige will be maintained, so that prestige will be maintained, because if people respect Guru, they respect the sadhus, they respect Krishna, then is it good for them? This will elevate them, whereas if they disrespect, this will cause them to go down into hellish condition of life. So in this way, devotee has to be close to Krishna, and he has to manifest Krishna consciousness in his dealings. That way he can be a true servant of the Lord, and then he'll be really satisfied at heart. Lord will be satisfied with him, and he'll be satisfied, and he'll be able to satisfy other persons as well. So, any question or comment?
One day we asked Ashura Prabhupada a question, he said something like, Ashura Prabhupada is such a lot of people here, devotees and scientists and karmis and everyone like that. He has a need to satisfy everyone, everyone feels good and happy being with Ashura Prabhupada. Prabhupada, we see all the devotees, everyone likes Ashura Prabhupada.
Prabhupada, he was a completely could see he had no, you know, sort of well wisher of everybody. Your ever well wisher. Exist in all spheres, and one of the ways to minimize this, or at least mitigate it to some extent, is to offer to ask for forgiveness when we feel we've offended. Is there anything else you could say about it, as far as, for instance, in the community of devotees in this kind of regard? Not only ask for forgiveness, but you know, exhibit a good service attitude. Cooperative attitude. Okay, one asks for forgiveness, then one should go on working cooperatively, leaving aside all, you know, previous whatever misunderstandings there have been. Because if we just, you know, maintain those, then we won't have gotten over that particular problem. Better to get aside. Okay, I, you know, might have made a mistake. We should feel a little bit ashamed of that, but you know, just let's get on with the work. That's the main thing. Kenny, you would come in and that's the mercy of Prabhupada, that he had given us that chance. But, you know, this, something has to be done. You could understand something has to be done. We've got to engage some persons in becoming devotees and preaching Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there's no hope at all. So something is better than nothing, isn't it? And, you know, the process is very powerful, so many devotees, by following it, they've become advanced in spiritual life. So we should have confidence that even though it is a fallen age, even though we might be very fallen, somehow if we stick on with the process of devotional service, we can become purified, we can become stronger, and eventually we can go back to God.
The only thing I know that Bhagavatam says that in previous yugas, for mental offenses, there would be visible direct reactions, but not in the age of Kali. I also know sometimes devotees then misunderstand that, thinking that because there's no kind of direct apparent reactions between mental offenses and physical plane, therefore it doesn't matter what they think. Of course, that's also not our that's not our philosophy.
So it would seem that, you know, the reactions are the question, considering that point. If in a previous age one had a reaction just for thinking something bad, then, you know, there's a special dispensation of giving a bit of extra chance in this age, because it's such a difficult age. But still, you know, if one offends devotees and Brahman, there's really heavy reaction for them. Certainly one wouldn't make any spiritual advancement if he offends devotees and maintains an offensive mentality. And it may not be externally evident what kind of reaction. Sometimes it may be, sometimes it may not be so clearly seen immediately, at least. But that's, for example, that man that tried to stop Prabhupada in Bombay. I mean, he got a reaction. He had to leave his body. Had a heart attack. Mr. N.
About in the 10th canto, brought a case supposed to be very severe, charging devotees with causing brainwashing and robbing people who joined the temple of their money that voluntarily gave as donations. And supposed to be a very big court case, and was dismissed in one day. And and Prabhupada writes about that in the 10th canto, how this shows the inconceivable grace of Krishna, that such a, supposed to be one of the most major court cases in U.S. history. The judge threw it out in one day, saying this is ridiculous. I don't think most devotees know, but a year later, that district attorney who made the whole case, trying to get famous, busting up the cults, he was caught up in scandal and was forced out of office.
That Ramchandra Khan, offended Hari Das, Lord Nityananda. The tax collectors came and they took everything away from him and destroyed his whole village. So it's very serious to try to oppose the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. Could get himself in a lot of trouble. Okay, so I think we'll finish there. And we thank the devotees of Navarsan for the hospitality. And it's very wonderful to come and participate with all of you in the Radha Yatra Festival. And I hope to be able to come back again in a few months.
We've asked Prabhupada Maharaj if you'll come back to Radhasan. Twisting his arm.
I say I'll have to see what they've said.
Yes, now the deities are twisting your arm.